Welcome to Real Estate Investing for Women. On this show, you will learn how to create wealth through real estate the blissful way. That means with very little stress and very little time. We talk about strategies, mindset, heartset, money smarts, resources, and so much more to ensure you're able to create the success you most deeply desire. Now, here's your host, Monica Sawyer.
Today, I am so excited to welcome to the show Matthew Pollard. Matthew is responsible for five multi-million dollar business success stories, all before the age of 30. His humble beginnings, the adversities he faced, and his epic rise to success show that anyone with the right motivation and right strategies can achieve anything they set their minds to. Today, Forbes calls him the real deal. Global gurus list him as a top 30 sales professional. Top Sales World magazine names him a top 50 speaker, and Big Speak lists him as an international top 10 sales trainer. Wow. He's also the best-selling author of the Introvert's Edge book series, which has sold over 75,000 copies and been translated into 16 languages. Wow, that is so impressive. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm ecstatic to be here and I love your energy. Thank you for bringing us all up.
Yes, thank you. So Matthew, I'm going to kind of let you in on a little.
I'm ready.
I'm not super interested in a sales conversation today. I'm more interested in a conversation about introverts. Does that sound okay to you?
That's perfectly fine. As a matter of fact, a lot of the interviews I do are much more central around the topic of introversion. People always are getting me in and saying, so I've got this boss, or so I'm trying to manage this team. And there are just so many misconceptions in the world of introversion, extroversion. And I believe the topic's constantly evolving about what we believe is possible for us. So yeah, absolutely. Go for your life.
Perfect. But let's start by you just telling us your story. You teased us with that intro. So tell us a little bit, kind of high level, 2-minute version.
Funnily enough, we were just talking about this before, how quite frequently people will hear somebody articulate, somebody that can get a message across and project extroversion upon them. And one of the things that I'm always pushing more introverts to do, which I'm so glad you were excited to share your own fact that you're introverted as well on today's show. But one of the biggest things that is my focus is trying to get other, what I call titan introverts, to share their introverted story. People that are successful that also happen to be introverted. And one of the biggest focuses for me is for helping people realize that while I hopefully come across as articulate now, I started off with a reading speed of a sixth grader. I was super introverted in late high school, and I just had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. And I was by far the least likely person to be here teaching people how to do it, which is perhaps why people now believe in the fact that I say that it's possible. And you know, what I mean by that is when I was in late high school, yes, I had a reading speed of a sixth grader. I got diagnosed with this thing called Erlen syndrome, which for the people that are watching via video means I put on this funny pair of colored lenses and miraculously I can learn to read. Now, I couldn't learn to read like everybody else, but I could start the process of learning. And day after day, I hustled to get into the top 20% of my state, which is how I graduated. But my family could see I was just exhausted and I was at a loss for what I wanted to do. And they could just see that I wouldn't have stuck out college if I didn't know exactly what it was I wanted. So we agreed that I was going to take a year off to find myself. I'm sure a lot of people listening have got kids like that. And it wasn't exactly allowed to just sit on the couch and watch Oprah. By the way, Oprah is an introvert as well, for those people that think they can't do small talk. But I also wasn't able to, my family wasn't rich. I couldn't exactly travel Europe and have a great gap year. So we all agreed I was going to get a job. And I took a job actually in a real estate agency, but I wasn't the person out selling. I was the guy in the back office doing day-to-day entry with a look on my face. Don't speak to me. I'm here to find myself for the year. Anyway, 3 weeks into that job, I get told that the person that managed that office had a phone call with his boss and they had decided to shut down that premise. I'm out of work. And this is Australia at Christmas time. So for those people that don't know Australia, it's summer and Christmas at the same time. So we go on holidays on the 20th of December and we don't come back till the 15th or 20th of January. No one's hiring except for these things called commission only sales roles, which for someone that struggled to talk to his own friends, let alone anyone else, was super uncomfortable. But they were the only jobs I could get. So there were 3 jobs in the paper. I applied for all 3. I got 3 interviews. I then got 3 job offers. And I started to feel maybe they saw something in me I didn't see in myself. Anyway, I accepted a job doing business-to-business telecommunications door-to-door. And my manager quickly put that to rest. He's like, Matt, we just hire everyone. Like, we just have this saying, we throw mud up against the wall and we see what sticks, which is a great saying until you realize you're the mud. After 5 days product training and not a single second of sales training, I get thrown on this road called Sydney Road in Melbourne, Australia. And it's like 1,000 stores on each side. And I get told to go sell. I didn't even know what to say. So I took a deep breath and I walked into my first store. And I say, luckily, I was politely told to leave, because shortly after that, I was sworn at. And then I always got told to get a real job, which was always my favorite because this was the only job I could get. Door after door, this just kept happening until I got to my 93rd door where I made my first sale. And I remember I made about $70 and I was ecstatic for about 45 seconds until I realized I got to do this again tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And for me, this was a defining moment, because I think what happens is a lot of people either quit, which is what 18 of the 20 people in my training group did, or they just agree that this is the way it's going to be and they grind it out. And I'm all for grinding it out, but not without a great strategy. So I decided that sales had to be a system. And I went to look for what that system could be. And remember, I had a reading speed of a sixth grader, so I wasn't exactly picking up a book, which is why my book being on audiobook was so important to me. But what I did find was YouTube. And I typed in sales system and all these videos came up. Long story short, I'd spend 16 hours a day either applying what I learned out in the field or practicing to go out the next day on the next piece of the system or improving what I didn't know. Weekends, I'd still spend 16 hours practicing. And day after day, I'd do this. But soon it was like 48 doors before my next sale, then 31, then 28, and then 26, and then 19. And then eventually I got it down to making a sale every 3 doors. And about 6 weeks in, my manager pulls me aside. And I thought I was in trouble because no one even knew who I was, really. They barely knew my name. I was the quiet guy that handed my paperwork in downstairs. And he said, Matt, we're blown away by this. We got our national sales report. And it turns out you're the number one salesperson in the company. This was 6 weeks later. And this was the largest sales and marketing company in the Southern Hemisphere. Shortly after that, they promoted me. I don't know why people think that just because you can sell, you can manage. I had no idea how to manage. I got given 20 people. They all quit within 24 hours. But I went back to YouTube, learned how to manage, and got promoted 7 times. Fast forward just shy of a decade. I'd started my own business about 12 months later, and I'd been responsible for 5 multi-million-dollar success stories. One of the things that I always share with people is, it doesn't matter how introverted you feel that you are or how much you think the cards are stacked against you. I actually think that introverts have an edge. And I know that you don't want to focus just on sales, but I don't think we just have an edge in sales. I think we have an edge in networking. I think we have an edge in public speaking, podcast hosting, the amount of detail you went into before we got onto this show. All of that is very much introvert behavior.
So your story makes me want to cry because it's my story. Like, I have a learning disability. So trying to get into school, like when I was trying to learn to read, exactly the same thing. I couldn't learn to read. Even today, I went to UC Berkeley and got a degree there. And I'm a very slow reader. Like, my success has been weird. It doesn't make any sense, right? I'm a very slow reader. I couldn't read. They were really scared. Like, I had this disability. I've always had a hard time even reaching out on the phone to my friends. The people that love me understand that Monica will not reach out. They have to reach out to me. So all of those things, like I graduated during a recession. And the only job I could get was a sales position. And I was terrible. But then within 3 months, I was the number one salesperson in the state of California. It was a California bank. So that was the entire company. So interesting. And it was the same thing. Like, I was studying 16 hours a day to figure out how to make this work because it was so hard. But I had to survive. I wasn't going to go back, live at home type of thing.
Absolutely.
Wow. I love that story. ditto.
What's interesting about what you said, though, because whenever I share my journey, there are so many introverts that have had similar journeys, whether they've had a reading disability or not, they fell into sales or something horrific happened that pushed them to test the boundaries of their introversion. And they discovered it wasn't a boundary at all. It was an advantage, because a planned presentation always outworks somebody that's winging things eventually. But introverts are more likely to hold on to that for our dear life, because without it, we're terrible. But if you think back about your 16-hour days, I know this for me, my 16-hour days felt terrible and I probably wouldn't wish them on anybody. However, after 6 weeks, I was the best in the business. After 3 months, you were the best in the business. And you got to benefit from that, just like I did, for the rest of my life. For a lot of people, they're like, I don't have the ability to dedicate 8 hours practicing and then, yeah, sure, I can do the 8 hours in office applying what I learned. You got to remember that we've both just shared that we went from terrified to sell to the best in the business. A lot of the people that are listening, they don't need to be the best in the business. All they need to be is good at sales or good at networking. And to do that, it doesn't take anywhere near as much effort. But even if you broke that amount of effort that we did to get to the best in the business over 6 months or 12 months, you'd go from terrible to average to good within weeks to amazing to the best in the business within a year. Think about how much time you spent learning your functional skills. Think about how much time you spent dedicating to perfecting the art of what you do and how hard it is to constantly be rejected and constantly be told by people that they're going with someone else, or how much time you spend doing proposals because you don't have time to do this. Well, I promise you, the time you'll save far outweighs the time you'll spend within months.
Ladies, before we get into the meat of this episode, let's have a quick word from our sponsor. If your idea of asset protection and tax mitigation is setting up a simple LLC and family trust structure, you could be leaving your business, real estate, and personal assets completely exposed. Imagine instead being able to take advantage of the bulletproof asset protection tools formerly reserved for the ultra wealthy. If you'd like to mitigate or eliminate your capital gains taxes while protecting your assets from predatory litigation, visit blissfulinvestor.com/trusts. That's plural. There, you will find out more in a free recording with the world's foremost expert on a new kind of trust structure you've probably never heard of. This is a true generational wealth building business and personal asset protection and tax mitigation structure dating back to the founding of our country and is still used today. Just go to blissfulinvestor.com/trusts to find out more. It's free.
You know, what's also interesting is, Matthew, I felt like being an introvert was a disease. Like, even when you say it, that you shared about you being an introvert too, my whole insides cringe because I feel like it's something we have to fake that we're not, or pretend that we're not, or hide. Like, I've got cancer or something. Like, it's something that's going to be with me my entire life and I can't get around it. And part of that is just understanding I'm not good at sometimes at being there for my friends because it's so hard for me to reach out and it hurts my heart. And yet I can't pull myself out. So there are things about the way that I am and the way that I live that make me feel broken. And I think a lot of that has to do with being an introvert. I know that my listeners are going to be like, you are not an introvert. I don't know what you're talking about. And people, if I'm on a stage or whatever, people will never believe that I'm an introvert. As a matter of fact, I was at Christmas with my mom, with my family, and I said in passing to my mother-in-law, I'm an introvert. And she looked at me, she says, you are not an introvert. You are lying. I've been in this family for 29 years and they don't understand how difficult it is for me socially to connect. We connect as introverts, we connect really well, but to connect with lots of different people. So Absolutely. Before we even get moving forward on this conversation, why don't you define introvert and the evolution that word has been through as far as our understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would highlight that. And I think that the word introversion and its definition has got way too complicated. And maybe there's been too much grant money involved. And because of that, we have to make it more complicated to get the next grant. So I want to really bring it back to bare terms. Now, I will say there are things like highly sensitive. There are things where somebody can be shy. And those aren't necessarily somebody that's introverted, right? You can be introverted and be highly sensitive and shy, but that doesn't mean that you are. There are extroverts, and this must be terrible for somebody to be extroverted and shy, but there are people that are extroverted and shy. So what I try to do is say, okay, yes, there is more complexity to this, but unless you want to spend the next 6 months researching it, let's bring it back to its simplest frame. And that is really just where you draw your energy from. So for instance, I love speaking from stage. It terrifies me. It feels like skydiving. Like, I'm so relieved that I did it and it went well. I need to do what I saw you do before a podcast interview. I needed to stop for a second and center myself. I can't talk to anyone before I go on stage, but I love doing it. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't draw my energy. I'm very good at networking. That's why I've written a book on it. I love doing it, but that doesn't mean it doesn't take energy from me. Now, it also takes less energy from me than it used to because I'm not anxious anymore. I'm not worried. And I also don't beat myself up about it as much afterwards. So there are things you can do to take less energy. But the thing that I want to highlight, that if you can just frame it this way, if I'm hanging out with a group of people at a networking event, if I'm speaking from stage, regardless of how much energy it takes from me, I'm an introvert if it takes energy from me. I'm an extrovert if I get off those activities feeling charged. Now, I am excited after I finish the keynote and I've got a whole bunch of energy, but I'm like a five-year-old that has stayed up too late, right? I've got all of this energy and then eventually I'm coming up to a crash, right? So as an introvert, I need to understand that. So if you draw energy from being by yourself or being with a small group of friends or close family, you're definitely an introvert. If you charge up by being with people all the time and you need people, you're definitely an extrovert. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't still want quiet time. You don't still crave it. In life, we need balance in everything that we do. But that is the easiest way to define it. Now, the biggest thing that I struggle with, and this is why I actually founded National Introverts Week, which is the third week of March, is to really highlight that introversion is not a disadvantage. And in fact, I believe that introverts are actually the secret titans that tend to be succeeding everywhere. The problem is we project extroversion upon them. So as soon as somebody becomes successful, we introverts say, they're clearly able to succeed because they've got that gift of gab. They've got that natural ability. So I want you to understand that, as I said, Oprah Winfrey and David Letterman are both introverted. So if you think that you can't do small talk, you're wrong. Zig Ziglar, the most well-known sales trainer of all time, is also an introvert. Ivan Meisner, the person that founded BNI, the world's largest networking group, is an introvert. Pick your discipline if you think you can't be a great entrepreneur. Brian Smith, the guy that founded billion-dollar brand UGG Boots, I interviewed him on my podcast, The Introvert's Edge, and he talked about his introverted journey to success. If you think you can't be emotive, Bill Murray, that guy that did Groundhog Day, whether you love it or hate it, he's dynamic and he's unpredictable, but he's also an introvert. So we can do all of those things. The thing that I really struggle with, though, is sometimes when I ask the question, and this hurts me to my soul, is when I ask somebody, and I just spoke at a leadership conference for AISP, which is the American Association of Inside Sales Professionals. If you can imagine, if you're a tech company or a major organization, your senior leadership go to this conference. And I did a survey of all of them about whether they were introverted or extroverted. And I got some introvert, some extrovert, great. But I got some, I was introverted, but don't worry, I'm extroverted now. Like it was a bad thing that they were introverted. Drives me nuts because the truth is you can't change your personality type. You are what you are. And it's not a disadvantage to be introvert. As a matter of fact, I love telling people I'm an introvert because the first thing is when I go to an event and I mention that I'm an introvert, when I talk, everybody gets quiet to hear what I have to say. Extroverts will often look after me. When I go to conferences, I will say things. I just spoke in Dubai and there were two MCs for that event and they were standing around talking to me. And I said, I apologize, guys. We're getting to about 15 minutes before I get on stage. I need to go and have my own time now. As an introvert, I need to bring my energy levels really far down and I need to rehearse my script over and over again. And I say script because I script out exactly what I'm going to say before I get into a story, because stories actually shape the reticular activating system of our brain. So I love getting into story because then I find our brain synchronize, and it's a study out of Princeton. And then I feel at ease and I see the audience warm to me as well. They're great. Stories are great at creating that artificial rapport that we introverts are amazing at turning into deeper rapport. But by suggesting that I'm an introvert and that I need that 15-minute period, what happens is everybody that heard that protects me. So I get to go away into my own space and rehearse what I'm going to say, which I think every speaker should do, as opposed to people being upset with me that I'm not communicating with them. And somebody will walk up to talk to me and somebody that heard me will go up and say, oh, Matt's happy to speak to you afterwards, but he's in at the moment getting ready. He's getting his mental space right to get up on stage. And nobody says, no, Matt, we'd prefer you to talk to us. We paid you a ton of money to come and speak, but we'd love you to be horrible on stage just so we can have a little bit of chit chat now. So understanding that you're introverted is powerful because quite frequently, some of the most senior people you'll meet are also introverted. So it creates a kinship with those people. With extroverts, they want to give you a bit of an extra go. So there's no downside to mentioning it. I interviewed the founder of WP Engine, Jason Cohen, and he said, I'm on board meetings. I founded the company, but all these extroverts will be yelling. And the moment I start to speak, everybody goes quiet to hear what the introvert has to say, because I struggle to even keep eye contact, and they know that. So they know how much effort that it takes for me. My friends know that I'm introverted, so they'll reach out to me and they'll leave me a voicemail message with the information they want me to know about the engagement that they're hoping that I come to, right? Because they understand it. My family, I did an article of it with for the Chicago Tribune, where I talked about how to survive Christmas. And the number one rule is let your family know that you're introverted, so that when you disappear for an hour, they don't think something's wrong. They know that you're recharging. Being honest about who you are is by far the most essential rule. And if you lie to yourself and say, no, I'm extroverted now, or I'm supposed to behave more extroverted, it's a recipe for disaster. It won't allow you to get more successful at anything. And it also means that you're moving away from what is congruently you, which actually will lead you to kill your energy.
Wow, that is so true. Oh my gosh, that was so amazing. And yes, I find this, all of those same things, right? Being in crowds, it's so interesting. So I went through a book tour for my book, Choose Bliss, and I was going all around the country talking on television and stuff like that. That took a huge amount of energy. Unbelievably fun experience, but it does take a huge amount of energy. You're on TV for 7 minutes. I'm sure you've been through this, right? You're on TV for 7 minutes and then you got to sleep for 4 hours to recover, type of thing.
Absolutely. Right?
But I remember my PR agent saying, Monica, you're so good. Don't memorize your answers. We'll write down the questions that they're going to ask you. Just wing it. And I was like, you don't understand. I need to memorize my answer so that I can wing it when I need to. I need to have a foundation of that's like right there, ready to catch me. And then I can wing it if I need to. But people just don't get it. This whole talking about getting on stage and needing some time. I'm totally going to do that, Matthew. The next time I'm on stage, just say, I need a few minutes. I don't want to, because I won't admit that I'm an introvert and that takes me off my game. And it's nobody's fault. It's just the way that I'm built. And I want to be on my game when I speak. I'll do a better job for you. So,
absolutely. You can have fun with it too. What I'll do sometimes is I'll say, now I'm going to walk away for 15 minutes because I need to charge up. Now, I know I just told you I'm an introvert, so I don't want you to think that I've run away and I'm not coming back. I will be back a couple of minutes before, but I'm going to go and walk away and have my own space. And they'll laugh it off. You don't need to be ashamed of your introversion. The fact is, people always want you to operate at your best. The problem is that if you don't educate them on what it takes to operate at your best, is that really their fault? I don't think it is. And when it comes to being scripted, I wouldn't suggest that being scripted is a bad thing. I would suggest, though, that when you think about the concept of scripting, because I talk about scripting a sale, scripting a networking conversation, you know, I wrote out what I was going to say from stage. The difference is, though, when you think about scripting, we all hear that telemarketer that calls us at 7:30 at night.
Yes.
And they sound robotic and they feel that they're reading. I've seen speakers, I speak at a bunch of conferences, especially around sales kickoff time. And a lot of them are tech kickoffs, medical, finance. I actually have spoken at a few real estate ones. And funnily enough, there's a ton of introvert in real estate as well. Yes. But what I find is they get up on stage and they've got their screen prompters and they've got their little paragraphs that they're going to read. And that's just lack of practice. Right. What I find is when I get people say, oh, I don't want to sound scripted. And I'm like, okay, I get it. We don't want to be that telemarketer at 7:30. But let me ask you, what's your favorite movie? And actually, I had a client recently that said it was Leonardo DiCaprio in Gangs of New York. He just loved Leonardo DiCaprio. By the way, Leonardo DiCaprio is also an introvert. And he said, I just love Leonardo DiCaprio in that movie. Doesn't he just embody the part? And he's like, oh, yeah, he's just so authentic. He's amazing in that. I'm like, that's great. Now remember that he's reading from a script too. So you tell me what's the difference between that and the telemarketer. And he said, I'm assuming that Leonardo DiCaprio reads it over and over again, and eventually he practices it without the script and he just embodies the part. And he really becomes the character, right? He has to be a character actor. So he fits into that part. I said, great. So what's the difference between that and you speaking from stage? The difference is this. You haven't had enough practice, so you haven't worked out what you're going to say and then rehearsed it. But secondly, it's easier for you. He's pretending to be someone that he's not. The goal of scripting is not for you to be someone that you're not. It's to work out what you want to say to present the best version of yourself. And as soon as you realize that, you can lean into it. So for me, everything that I just said on the concept of introversion, as I was saying it, there would be some people that were listening to this and going, there is no way that this person is introverted because he just covered off on 20 facts. He pieced them all together, made all those facts stick, and he did it in such a comfortable way. I would never have been able to do that if I didn't write it out first and memorize it. Now, I did that years ago, and I've benefited that forever since. The whole concept of scripting is exactly to your point now. I have done, nearly 200 interviews. And when I first started, I would look at these are the questions and I'd want people to stick to them. And I was always worried they'd ask me a question outside the scope of what I was prepared for. And now I tell people that I've done 150 interviews, you better ask me something outside the box or your audience won't get something new. So because of that, I'm comfortable, but it becomes from the synthesis of all of the different answers that I've now rehearsed. It's very hard to take me off script because I have so many of them and I can deliver them all in a natural and authentic way.
So let's get that to more relevant for our ladies around real estate. You talk about networking. So in the real estate world, we're looking for deals. We're looking to sell deals. We're looking for vendors. We're looking for partners. So there's networking, there's negotiation, there's all of those pieces, right? And I know that you contend that we have an edge as introverts in those situations. So let's talk a little bit about your approach. For instance, in networking, I know you talk about this unified message, and I loved that, by the way. So I want to make sure that we get there so we can help the ladies understand how they can lean into their introversion around networking and negotiation rather than backing away from it in fear that they can't hold up to what's required.
Absolutely. One thing that I think especially ladies like to do is be much more authentic, and they don't like pitching. And I think it's interesting. Like a lot of men will, even if they don't feel comfortable pitching, they'll push themselves through it, even if it makes them feel inauthentic. But what I find is, especially because I have a lot of female clients, and what I find is unless they feel like it's super congruent, they won't feel comfortable doing it. And they always feel that networking is the epitome of used car sales, right? So they go in and somebody asks them what they do. And if they're really advanced, they'll know how to do an elevator pitch, which is, I do this for this group of people, even if they have this common objection, which feels slimy and salesy. An example of that is I'm a sales and marketing coach that works with introverted professionals, even if they think that they can't sell, right? That sounds salesy. It's hey, great to meet you. I'm trying to get a deal. This is what I do. I'd love to work with you because I'm trying to buy a new car. And if you worked with me, I think that I would be able to afford the deposit for that. It doesn't come across well. It's a horrible, tacky way of doing it. So people move away from that and they're like, oh no, I won't say that. What I'll do instead is I'll say, oh, I work in real estate, or I specialize with helping people find distressed properties, or whatever the statement is. That's the same as me. I'm a sales and marketing trainer, and I've helped 3,500 small business owners. Right? It's still salesy. So what I do, and by the way, networking should always be about being interested before you try to be interesting. So this strategy works on the basis that you don't start talking about yourself straight away. And truthfully, if you do that, you're missing out, because the more you know about them, the better off you will be, because you'll have more ammunition to speak to them. But when somebody comes to me and I'll ask them questions and I'll be interested and I'll ask, people love talking about themselves. So the best thing for an introvert is we're empathetic and we're great at active listening. So because of that, all we need to do is work out what questions to ask. And I always tell people, if you don't know who's going to be in the room, you've let yourself down. When I go to a networking event, the very first thing I do is look at the meetup page or the LinkedIn page event or whatever it is. And I'll always find myself to the people that are going. Right. Even if I look at the event's Facebook page and see who went last time by who's tagged, I'll look at them on LinkedIn and what I call profile shopping. I'll look at all the profiles of all the people that are going. And yes, this sounds like it takes a bunch of time. It's nowhere near as painful, though, as walking into the room, walking up to the first person you speak and finding out they sell insurance. And now you're going to be sold insurance for the next 20 minutes. So what I like to do is go through and look at all their profiles. And then I'll find two or three people that really interest me, five or six people that really interest me. And I'll send them a LinkedIn connection saying, hey, I saw you went to this event last year or last month, or I saw you going to this event, depending on where you find them. I'm really interested in coming because I'm passionate about X. Do you feel that this is a group that I should come along to? And if they respond yes, then great. When you get there, they're going to recognize your face. You're going to recognize theirs. And if you're clever, they've told you yes. And you can look at their profile. You can look at what they've posted, what they're sharing, what they're commenting on. It's pretty easy to come up with conversational topics. I remember when I was looking for Dell to sponsor an event that I did, I literally connected with somebody and asked them that exact question, a very similar statement, asked if they were going to the event, connected with them. And it was one of the senior executives for Dell. And I went and just quickly checked out to see if he had an Instagram profile. He did, and he was ridiculously into Peloton. So when I got to the event, he asked me how I was doing. I said, I'm doing great. I'm just really annoyed with the weather because I'm a runner. And when it's raining, I can't go and do my run. I find it so much better for my mental health when I'm out running every day. And then he just spoke about Peloton for the next 30 minutes. And by the time he was done, he was like, oh my gosh, Matt, I spent the last 30 minutes talking about Peloton. I haven't even asked you what you do. And from that moment on, I had the floor. So you can do your research before to ask great questions, but sometimes it's really not as hard as you think. You can find something about them that gets them chatting for 20 minutes, and they so appreciate the fact that they're able to talk about themselves. But when they get to what it is that I do, I will respond with just this. I'm the rapid growth guy. Full stop. I say it like I'm an accountant or I'm a bookkeeper. But here's the difference. The rapid growth guy doesn't mean anything. And what happens is people then lean into that and they're like, hang on a second, what exactly is that? Now, the reason why that works is because of a few factors. One is it's called a hook statement. What we want to do is we're creating interest and intrigue. So you can't call yourself the real estate lady because that automatically is going to get people to trigger. You're obviously in real estate, right? I had somebody call themselves the data wizard and they're like, what do you think? And I'm like, you're in data analytics. I'm pretty sure they're going to get to that point, right? They're not going to lean in and go, what exactly is that? Now, so when I call myself the rapid growth guy and I say, oh, thanks for asking. I'm the rapid growth guy, full stop. And they're leaning forward and they're like, what exactly is that? So they're interested, but they've also talked about themselves for 20 minutes. So because of that, I now have complete license to tell them more because they're going to ask. And they're going to ask because they're interested and because they feel like they should to give value back to me. And so they say, what exactly is that? And I respond with, thanks for asking. One of the things that I'd love to see more than anything in the world is an amazing introverted service provider with enough talent, skill, and belief in themselves to go and start a business of their own. But one of the things I just hate to see, and I find it happens so often, is they end up stuck in this endless hamster wheel, struggling to find interested people, trying to set themselves apart, trying to make the sale, all while feeling like people only care about one thing, price. Do you know anyone like that? And they'll respond with, yeah, I'm like that. Of course they are, because I've gone to the right networking event. I've researched who they are. And I'll respond with, I'm on a mission to help people like yourself realize that you're not a second class citizen. Your path to success is just different to that of an extrovert. And instead of focusing on your functional skill, which you know, I find most introverts are usually amazing at, all it takes is focusing on three things outside the scope of your functional skill to really create a rapid growth business that revolves around you, your family, and your life, not the other way around. And then I'll say, actually, you know what? Let me give you an example. And then I'll tell them a story. And stories short circuit the logical mind, which means you're speaking directly to the emotional mind. The logical mind, by the way, is going, this will work for me. That won't. I don't have time for this. I'm going to cut him off. The emotional mind just screams out story time and it listens. We've had people on cold calls use stories with C-level executives that logically, you know, when somebody gives an objection using logical reasoning, they get 8 seconds before the C-level executive hangs up. We get 2.5 minutes before they hang up on average because of the short circuiting of the logical mind. When you use it in networking, you can tell a 3-4 minute story and people are still engaged. That'll feel like 10 minutes for you. But I promise you, people will listen and you show them how you help people in the story. Notice in the networking spiel, I didn't actually even say what I do. I talked about what I love to see, what I hate to see, and the mission that I'm on. It's not about me. I talk about the change I want to see in the world and what I'm passionate about. People love to get behind that. So by changing the flow of what you do to make it not about yourself, and this is the thing that and introverts should love this because for the first time, you're going to hear a rule about sales, networking, and public speaking that's going to feel totally great for you, which is this. Sales, networking, and public speaking, the number one rule in all of these inverted arenas is it's not about you. The moment you make it about you, you fail. So I call myself the rapid growth guy to create that intrigue that leads into me talking about what I love to see and what I hate to see in the world and the mission that I'm on, the change that I want to make. And then I'll tell a story about someone else just like them who had the problems that they have or that they should have, because I should know my niche by now, and how I got them to a positive outcome. So they see it as me explaining because they asked, which is why they give me permission to explain. And they're still intrigued because until we get to the story, they don't really get to understand how I can help. Now, for a lot of people, they feel like they have to convince and cajole customers to talk to them, or they're educating clients and they didn't ask to be educated. This is a totally different model that gets people to lean in. And it comes across as you're not trying to sell. You're trying to motivate and inspire them to take action in their own. And when you get to the end of telling the story, what I love to do is deliver a moral of the story and then say, does that make sense? And as soon as I say, does that make sense? The person's always like, yeah, that makes total sense. I'm exactly like Wendy. How did you work with Wendy? And you're like, now's not really the time to really go into that. And you set a separate meeting, right? Because the one thing you should never do in a networking event is sell. As soon as you sell, everything goes totally wrong, right? Because you'll say, oh, thanks for asking. You'll start to talk. And next thing you know, somebody will walk up and go, oh, John, I was dying to see you. And now you've been interrupted. So it's broken. Plus, they came to networking events not to be sold to, but to have people buy their stuff usually. So the moment you start selling at that event, even if they do say, I want to move forward, they will resent you for taking up their time and selling them something. So by pushing back and saying, now's not really a great time for that. We're all here to network, but I'm happy to set up a separate meeting. All of a sudden they appreciate you and they're like, wow, this person comes from a really abundant place. And I have never known anyone to be seen as abundant and not get somebody's respect.
Wow, I love that. Okay, so that's amazing, by the way, as you well know. But let's say, for instance, so I'm going on a cruise in March where I will be speaking about my book, Choose Bliss. Yeah. There are going to be 2,500 people there. I obviously cannot research all the people. We do have a Facebook group. A lot of people are not going to log on. There will be people, hopefully, that I run into that I can do research on. But there's going to be an awful lot of networking opportunities where I have no idea who I'm talking to or anything. So let's talk about that sort of impromptu networking opportunity as an introvert. I'll tell you, I'm scared to death because people come at me, right? They're like, oh, I love your book, whatever, all this stuff. Great. But then what do I say? I feel like an idiot.
Well, I mean,
that's interesting.
You're still lucky, right? Because a lot of people listening don't have a book and people aren't chasing up to them. So, you know, because of that, you have a natural advantage. But so I'll answer your question from your point, but I'll also answer it for those people that are going on a cruise or some event where perhaps they haven't done the research at all.
Now, I would prefer actually the other one for my ladies is much more important. Definitely.
It's easy to cover off on both because firstly, I can tell you that usually when you have 2,500 people at an event, usually they create an app so that you can know all the different events that are going on. And usually they have an attendee list. So when you say there are 2,500 people, I don't have the time to do that. Well, you don't have to research all 2,500. But one of the things you'll find, and I did this actually, one of the senior people at IBM who endorsed my book, I met him at a conference where I was speaking at the conference, but there were like 3,000 people at that event. And so I got somebody from my team to just run through and quickly profile scan all the people that were there and hand pick maybe 50 profiles to do a deep dive into and then send a message saying, hey, I saw you going to this conference. I'm heading to that conference too. I hope we can squeeze in a time to connect. By the time I went to that 3-day conference, half of my day was booked out with 30-minute meetings. So I went to a conference that was more like a bunch of scheduled meetings. So what happens is for those people that feel uncomfortable with the people that are constantly sending in messages saying, hey, we should catch up for 30 minutes to do a sales call. Like, that's not the same as doing what you're doing. You're reaching out to them saying, hey, I'm coming to the same conference you are. And that highlights that you're interested in a similar topic. And you would just like to meet them for a specific reason. And it doesn't need to be salesy. It's that you just want to get a chance to meet them because their profile looked interesting and network. And people go to conferences, by the way, for a chance to network. So you're not telling somebody, hey, I'd love for you to do what you didn't have planned. Stop working today and meet with me instead. You're saying, hey, you want to network, so let's network. And by the way, half the people you reach out to statistically are going to be introverted, which means that they're going to go a pre-planned meeting as opposed to walking in and not knowing everyone. Absolutely. And that's, by the way, what the person at IBM did. He reached out and said, yeah, absolutely, we'll catch up for 30 minutes. We caught up for 30 minutes. I find out that something that wasn't on his profile is he was about to be awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award for ISP. And because of that, next thing I knew, he and I are best of friends. He's endorsing my book. And he's also an introvert, by the way. So he's impassioned to drive my books to in front of everybody at the organization. Again, just because there's lots of people, again, you could spend the entire week running into people that were the wrong people. And while it doesn't feel as time intensive as going through 2,500 profiles, it's really easy to go through a whole bunch of profiles and quickly go, yes, no, yes, no. Okay, I'm fully stacked. You may not be all the right people, but you'll get a few of them. Now, when you go to events and you have done no research whatsoever, my suggestion is to stay true to who you are. So what do I mean by that? So actually, I'll give you an example. So we worked with an insurance, we've picked on insurance salespeople before. So let's use an insurance example. So I worked with a guy who sold insurance, and he said, Matt, look, networking's the worst for me. I'm an introverted guy and I do the whole being interested thing. But the moment I say that I sell insurance, it's like I watch their eyes explode and they're like, how do I get away from this person? I'm about to get a sales pitch. And I said, well, you know, what we've got to do is stop using the word insurance, right? Because if you use the word insurance, people put you in a box and they're like, well, I know what that is. And that's one step above used car sales. By the way, when I used to say I was a sales trainer, people had the same reaction, right? Because especially introverts who I wanted to serve would always give me these reasons for why they couldn't sell as an introvert. And now I was on the defensive explaining why they could, as opposed to getting them to lean in. So I said, help me understand though, because I'm big on leading with passion. So who are you most passionate about serving? And his response was, no, I really just like helping everybody. And I said, really, everybody? Help me understand. A person that earns $50,000 versus a person that earns $150,000. Which one of those groups would you prefer to serve? And he said, well, obviously the people that would make $150,000. I said, why? And he said, well, they can buy more insurance products. And I'm like, that's not really passion. That's more, hey, I want to sell you stuff so I can buy a new car. So let's get a little bit deeper for a second. Let's imagine for a second, there were two choices. One was a person that had grown up poor, studied really hard, got a scholarship to Harvard, went to Harvard and worked really hard, won Ducks of the Class or whatever, and won all these awards, got employed by a large organization. Now he earns $250,000 a year as a C-level executive in a big organization with a big team. As opposed to somebody that dropped out of school, saved up a ton of money. Now they started a business. They've got a ton of staff working for them and they make about $250,000 a year, right? So they're earning the same. Their life trajectories were different. And he said, obviously, the small business owner. I said, what do you mean, obviously? This person went, studied hard, got into Harvard. What do you mean? And he said, for me, I just feel like they deserve it more. And I'm like, talk to me about that for a second. And he said, well, I had this grandfather. And he started telling me this story about his grandfather and how his grandfather saved up and bought a farm. And he looked after all of his staff. But then his grandfather got sick and he had to sell the farm to pay for the medical treatment and also because he couldn't work. And he said, I watched my grandfather just fade away and die in this tiny little apartment in front of the TV for the last decades of his life. He said, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. And I'd love to stop that happening. And I'm like, I'm confused. You sell life insurance. Like, how could this possibly have helped? Like, he didn't die. And he said, I was blown away at how much he knew. He said, I discovered these policies that allow me to put cash into an insurance policy. So when you're a high cash flow business, like farms have to be, you can get a high yield return in these life insurance policies. So then you can flip that into actual real investments in the future. And if he had done that from an early year with his high cash flow business, he would have had a whole bunch of assets, which would have meant he would have got a golden retirement. And I was like, well, why wouldn't you just spend your life being articulating how passionate you are about helping these people that create something out of nothing, the hustlers of the world, not end up in second-class retirements? And he said, well, I would love to do that, but I don't know that I'm always going to go to networking events and find somebody that was interested in that. So what we did is we created this unified message. Now, firstly, he came up with this concept. He wanted to call himself the financial cowboy. And I was like, finance, firstly, is a commoditized word. We know you're in finance or financial planning or insurance or something like that. So we put you in a commodity. Even if it's not the commodity you're selling, it's the wrong opportunity. And the word cowboy attached to it makes me feel like you're going to grab my money and go away and spend it on cocaine. So not the right fit for me. I said, what if we call you the hustle lifeguard instead? And so the reason we called him that is really, the people that start these businesses that have got high cash flow businesses, kind of the hustlers of the world, right? But what happens is they prioritize their staff. They're always looking after their staff and making sure their staff retirement needs are under control. But they don't really think about themselves. A lot of them say, no, my business is my asset. But most of these businesses never sell. So they don't prioritize their investment needs. So I know that you're going to say, you know, as part of your last question, why do, you know, what are my property investment strategies and things like that? And the reason I know is because I don't not prioritize my later life because I'm excited about my business. No matter how excited I am, which I hope people can tell, I love doing what I do. However, so for him, what I said is he should go to networking events and say, when somebody asks what it is that he does, he should say, I'm the hustle lifeguard. And when they say, what exactly is that? One of the things I love to see more than anything in the world, and talk about these people that start things out of nothing, but what he finds more often than not, and he hates seeing it, is they don't prioritize their retirement, even though they had high cash flow businesses, and that leads them in second-class retirements. And then explaining that he's on a mission to help these people, and then go on and then tell a story. As soon as he did that, his entire business transformed. Now, his question then was, Matt, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with that, though, because when I'm going to networking events, how do I know that the person I'm speaking to is somebody that has a high cash flow business? I said, here's the thing. If you own who it is you are and who it is that you serve, even if the person you're speaking to doesn't do that, they likely will know somebody that does. And because of that, they will introduce you. So in my book, I talk about the benefit of having what I call momentum partners. I say that when you go to networking events, most people in their head say, what I'm really looking for is a prospect. Prospects are like staying in the hamster wheel. We get a deal, then we make our money, and then we have to go hustle for another deal. That's not the way out. What you really want to go, when you're going networking, I reluctantly will accept a deal when all there is an opportunity for getting a deal in a networking event. When I'm out networking, what I'm looking to do is make sure I never have to go networking again. And how I do that is by recruiting what I call momentum partners and champions. Momentum partners are people that believe in the work that I do and are willing to share it with the world. For instance, you invited me being on this podcast because I was on somebody else's podcast who recommended my work. That person is a momentum partner of mine because he believes in what I do and he shared it with you. And you're like, yes, I want to get Matthew on my podcast. Now, that meant I got to share my message with his audience and now your audience, and then likely many more audiences because he believes in what I do and he shares it. Now, a good momentum partner, while you don't have an official agreement signed, a good momentum partner, you should also do the same for them because you believe in what they do. Judy Robinette, who wrote the foreword for my sales book, you know, when she and I met, she called me because she was looking for advice. She read an article I wrote on Entrepreneur. She was looking for some advice on how to close higher speaking fee deals because she found that when she mentioned the price she got, she didn't get them. And she was just charging too little. So I gave her a script to use to get a much higher price. And she was so appreciative and that I didn't try and sell her anything, she introduced me to 3 podcasts. So I then introduced her to 3 podcasts. And we did that off the cuff for over a year. We both made hundreds of thousands of dollars off clients that came from those podcasts purely because we believed in what each other did. That is what a momentum partner is. So when you go to a networking event, look for those groups of people. And when you find them, it doesn't matter if they're buying your stuff. They are hugely powerful. Champions are the group of people that have high credibility to your industry or people that allow you to break into other industries. For instance, Ivan Meisner came through a momentum partner of mine. I was introduced through a momentum partner to his work. Now, so many people, when they get introduced to someone like Ivan Meisner, try to sell him something. Now, for me, I wouldn't care if he asked me to pick up his laundry. I would have done it. But when we got and had a dialogue, he became a champion for me, and he started recommending my work. He started endorsing my work. And because of that, it gave my work credibility. So the best way to make more money is to have high levels of credibility. You need champions for that. And to expand your network, you need momentum partners for that. Now, for those people to champion your work, either of them, they need to be inspired by your passion and mission. And that's what the networking script does. So when I go to an event and I think that the person I'm speaking to may not be the person that I need to sell to, or that may not be my best customer, I still stay true to who I am. I stay authentic. I share my passion and mission in the exact same way. And one of two things happen. One is they go, oh my gosh, that's exceptional. Here's somebody I think you need to meet. The second thing happens is more often than not, I'm the first person that they've ever met that energizes them from when they're hearing about what somebody does, because they're hearing about passion and mission they don't feel sold to. And because of that, they try and borrow my passion for what they do. So even if I articulate, they're not my ideal customer, and I use the word I specialize, not I work exclusively with. Specialize is wonderful. People expect somebody that specializes to have a better general knowledge than everybody else. So what happens is they say, I'm not exactly your niche, but what you just said, I really feel that could work for me, i.e. I'm an extrovert, but I really could gravitate to systems and process. Or I have a product-based company, however, I really feel that I need to be utilizing a more solid strategy that leverages my face as the brand anyway, because that's where all brands are going. Now, I could choose to disagree. I could choose to say, no, I don't want to have you as a client. Or I could feel that they're the perfect fit for me. That's my choice. So what I find is by staying true to who I am, it actually opens up more doors. But at the moment I start bending myself to every audience or being careful to not tell them what I do until I find out more about whether or not I can sell to them, firstly, it's dishonest and it's going to make you feel uncomfortable. But secondly, it always leads to a less successful outcome, because the moment you start hedging, then all of a sudden it's like karma coming down to punish you. It's, if I sell two different businesses, I'm going to mention this business to an ideal customer for this one and vice versa. So just stick to what you absolutely are born to do, and you will always find you get a better outcome.
You covered so much information there. Thank you so much. And we're out of time. I want to be respectful, and we need to do extra too. So that was amazing, Matthew. So thank you so much for that. You are fantastic. I want more information. I'm sure my ladies do too. Could you tell us how they can reach you, please?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the easiest way to obviously get in touch with me is obviously to go to LinkedIn, check me out there. There's a ton of free content I put out there. I find a lot of people buy programs before looking at all the free content. I learned on YouTube, right? So I put a ton of free content out on YouTube as well. Definitely check that out. If you're interested in creating your own version of the Rapid Growth Guy or the Hustle Lifeguard, go to matthewpollard.com/growth. There you'll get a template that you can download that shows you the 5 steps to do that in a more specific way. And you'll find it'll only take you about an hour. It's surprising that nobody does this stuff. And that's the problem. We listen to all these podcasts. We read all these books, but we don't actually take action on it. And that's a great template for you.
Yes.
But my publisher hates me when I say this, but if you are interested in checking out The Introvert's Edge, you don't need to buy my book. Just download the first chapter. I'll help you get past the belief that you can sell or network as an introvert. But depending on whether you go to theintrovertsedge.com or theintrovertsedge2networking.com, i.e. which book do you want, download the first chapter, get over the belief that you can sell or network. And then in both books, I give you the exact steps to follow in the first chapter. Like in the sales book, if you do nothing more than grab what you currently say, fit it into the steps that I give you. First thing you realize, some things don't fit. Throw that out. You shouldn't be saying it to customers or prospects. You'll then realize there's some gaping holes, usually around question, which maybe we'll do that as a special part of your segment as well.
Yes.
for your premium clients. But you'll learn that you probably don't tell great stories. You don't ask the right questions. And then you'll realize that there's some things out of order, which is why you end up finding sales so difficult. If you do nothing more than that, you'll double your sales in the next 60 days. And you can obviously access those free chapters at theintrovertsedge.com and theintrovertsedge2networking.com.
And I just got shivers. Thank you for that. That was amazing. Yay, we don't have time for our 3 rapid fire questions, but we do have time to do extra, which we're going to be talking about how to create that unified message. So he's got a template you can get download, but we're going to do a quick run through on exactly how to make that happen. And I want some personal advice. You guys will get to see this on mine, which is I am the blissful millionaire. So I'm really excited to have that conversation and also use that to break it down. Does that sound fun, Matthew?
Sounds great.
Awesome. Matthew, thank you so much for all you've offered in this portion of the show.
It was my pleasure. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.
Yes. And ladies, thank you for joining Matthew and I for this portion of the show. We do have more, so stay tuned. We're going to be talking about how to create that unified message. That's going to be on Extra. So if you're subscribed, stay tuned. If not, go to realestateinvestingforwomenextra.com and you can listen to the next conversation. For those of you that are leaving Matthew and I now, thank you so much for joining us. You know how much I appreciate you, and I look forward to seeing you next time. And until then, remember, goals without action are just dreams. So get out there, take action, and create the life your heart deeply desires. I'll see you soon. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's show.
If you'd like to find out more about how to become a blissful millionaire, go to blissfulinvestor.com. See you next time.